Hi, it's Jasmine, you know, that girl who did you know what way before the internet ever existed. Join me and my special guest every week as we talk about anything and everything because nothing is too taboo. So punch your ticket and get on board the crazy train with me, Jasmine St. Clair. All aboard!
Hi, welcome to a new episode of Crazy Train with Jasmine St. Clair. I've been waiting forever for this interview because ages ago when Opie and Anthony had an actual radio show, can you believe I did not get along with them? I actually walked off the show, I'm pretty sure. But years later, I was very fortunate to reconnect with Anthony Kamiya. So here he is. Let's welcome Anthony Kamiya. So I just have to say one thing. I know that I said it prior, like when you stepped on, you look better than you did when I first met you when I walked off your show, like back in the 90s or early 2000s. And the last time I was on your show, how have you been and what have you been doing in South Carolina?
Jasmine, thank you for having me on. And thank you for the compliment. That's awesome. I've obviously been canceled since I had a regular radio show. And it's only made me more adamant and more passionate to talk about things that get people canceled. And I see you've kind of done the same thing these days, which is awesome. But I'm feeling good. I'm down in South Carolina. I had to get out of New York State. That state is an abomination. It is one of the worst states. And I would argue that maybe California's worse, but I hadn't lived there. So I don't know if it is. I would definitely pit New York against California, though, as the worst state in the nation, and had to leave. And I ended up in South Carolina about a year ago, and it is beautiful. It's wonderful. And I'm enjoying the shit out of myself.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And speaking of cancel culture, when I first went on your show, I believe it might have been the late 90s. Is that when the Opie and Anthony show started? Is that what it was?
Yeah, we were in Boston, and then we came to WNEW in New York City about 98, 99. And yeah, that's when we were doing the whole shock jock thing. So we had to be shocking, Jasmine. Let me tell you, there had to be something completely shocking about. Yeah, I know. It's a bit embarrassing, but it bought me this house.
Yeah, but you're cooler than that other guy. Like, who names himself after the freaking dog in Garfield? Like, the dog in Garfield was cool, but, like, no grown man calls himself Opie because it's like, I don't know. But I don't think that type of show would survive in today's temperature. What are your thoughts on cancel culture today? I kind of know what you're going to say, but what are your thoughts in general with the role cancel culture has played in entertainment?
First of all, it's hilarious that the first thing that comes to your mind is the Garfield Opie and not the Mayberry Andy Griffith Show Opie. So that just shows how much more advanced in years I am. But yeah, you're absolutely right. There's no way in hell the shock jock shows of the 90s could ever be a thing these days. And I think there's two reasons for that. First is very obvious. The cancel culture makes it that anything controversial that someone says, which just means telling the truth, really, when you think about it, making jokes about stereotypes, and stereotypes are only there because they're true, it gets you in trouble these days. And that's one thing. The other thing is, how are you shocking anyone by talking in 2024? How are you shocking people by talking about, oh my God, I saw a girl and hold on, she showed her boobs. Yes, she did. It's not shocking. I've just watched 20 literal snuff films. From the time I woke up on social media, I've watched people die in between adorable cat videos. I gotta tell you, that mix has to be fucking our heads up. But the thought that that was a thing in the 90s, shock jock, you're shocking someone. What were they doing that was so shocking? I'll tell you, really nothing. And compared to nowadays, it's quaint. So like I was saying, that's the second reason that it's just not a thing anymore. And it couldn't be a thing in 2024.
Well, I think the internet might also have a role in that, because the way these people live today on the internet, it's like, oh, well, if it's not on the internet, it didn't happen. Oh, my God. Well, yeah, that's the beauty of Opie and Anthony and anyone that existed in this world, like pre Instahose and Instagram, whatever you want to call it.
It is true. There was during that time, I think people were genuinely entertained by a show that was talking about things that you shouldn't be talking about, and presenting sexuality and stereotypes and that kind of dark humor. And no one really knew how to bitch about it back then. There was really no recourse for people that just wanted to bitch about stuff they heard on the radio. They could call the station and the program director and they would just tell them, yeah, go screw off. They could try to complain to the FCC, but 99% of those complaints were unwarranted unless they were something that was genuinely in the rules of the Federal Communications Commission. And they didn't have a place to go to bitch. Now, holy shit, they could bitch about anything they see or hear and literally get people fired from their jobs. So that feeling of power that a lot of these people have gotten, and the ability to actually get people fired from their jobs and, you know, thrown out of their own families, for God's sake, is kind of what gave them the power and what made this cancel culture the thing that it is.
Do you think the pandemic might have fostered more of this behavior? Because I feel as though with the pandemic, people were saying shit, like they're bringing stuff up from like 20 years ago, 10 years ago, and they want to seem relevant. Do you think any of this might have come from the COVID scare, pandemic, scandemic?
That is a great, valid point right there. I think you're absolutely right. Not only did it open people up to start criticizing the powers that be in a way that they had to kick back by, again, canceling people. If you brought up things like, what was it, hydrochloroquine and all this other, all the other alternative remedies to COVID, you were looked at as a person that needed to be silenced, that needed to be canceled. So that was a part of it. I think another part of it was so many people that normally wouldn't have gone to social media really got on board, because that was their only place to communicate. They couldn't go out anymore. They couldn't go to bars. They couldn't go to their clubs and wherever they did go to talk to real people. So I think you got a class of people that were compelled to complain and argue and be offended that normally wouldn't be. The internet, you know, maybe not at the beginning of COVID, but certainly at the beginning of the internet, it was more of a cooler class of people that could take some shit and take the criticism. And I think it really came to a head with COVID, where everyone had to go online to just be a human being at that point. And I think it was very hard for them to listen to things that offended them. And hence cancel culture really started to take hold at that point and screw up a lot of people's lives.
Oh, 100%. And I feel as though with COVID, of course, everyone's like locked down in their freaking houses watching TV and getting brainwashed all day. I mean, I was not vaccinated. I had no intention of getting a freaking vaccine. I couldn't believe my mother told my cousin, whose wedding I wanted to go to, that I wasn't vaccinated. It's like, dude, it's like one less wedding gift now, one less guest at your wedding to get drunk and do things, maybe get into a fist fight or something at the wedding. But it's just one of those things where like, you didn't know when it was going to end. And with that said, so I know that back in the day, we did a lot of crazy things on the radio. What do you think was one of the most outrageous, or some of the most outrageous things that on your show that happened?
Years ago, especially before, like when I was talking about when shock jocks were shocking. Now, like I said, it seems kind of innocent and quaint when you look at what shock jocks were doing compared to what's happening now. But at the time, it was pretty shocking. And with the Opie and Anthony show, we were always trying to top the last thing we did. It was, you know, if we got some news or got our bosses mad at us or the phones lit up because of something we did, it was a good thing. This wasn't something you were afraid of. This was something you strived to do. So we would always try to do outrageous things. And I will say in the early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s, when we were at WNEW in New York City, me and Opie had a segment. And this I remember as probably the most outrageous thing we ever did. Cell phones were very new back then. The fact that everyone had them. And the big thing was, can you get a signal? I don't have a signal. Oh, I'm cutting out. I can't. So we wanted to see in what environment you might lose a cell phone signal. So we had a woman come up. We put a Nokia phone in her vagina and called it to see if we could actually get a signal from a woman's vagina. And she was in another part of the studio. We were there. She took that Nokia phone and put it all the way in her vagina. And we called the number, and lo and behold, ba-da-loo-doo, 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 boo, ba-da-loo-doo, boo. We heard the ring coming from her vagina. And that will always stand out as, even now, with the fact that maybe it's not as shocking, that would be something people go, yeah, holy shit, that's a little out there.
Yeah, I don't know what carrier nowadays actually has a signal that's that good. It's definitely not fucking AT&T because they suck. No, that, I have to tell you.
AV&V.
Yeah.
That should be in one of their commercials that they actually get a signal in a woman's vagina.
I think you have to. The thing is, if that thing was up her twat, right? So you have a Nokia phone up your vagina. How big is your vagina that you're able to squeeze a Nokia phone? Like, how wide was it? Did she have like kids or something? I mean, how big was that thing?
Thank God, back then, you know, we take for granted now that we have an iPhone and whatnot, and they're pretty slim, but they are wide. You want a big screen and everything. The Nokia phones were more like a TV remote. They, you know, were a little thinner, a little thicker, but a little more uniform in width and breadth that she was able to, shove that right in there. And I'm sure her previous occupation had given her the ability to shove probably something a lot bigger up there.
What was it? What, BBC? Like something like that?
Like, yeah, I can't envision this. I would assume. Yeah.
So what even got you into being a shock jock or get into radio?
Yeah, it was mid-90s. I was pretty old to get into radio. Like, my first foray into radio was in my mid-30s. And a lot of people in radio get into it out of college. They go to college for communications and then get out. They get placed at a college radio station, whatever it is. I was in construction. I did sheet metal work for my entire life up until then. And I had been in bands with my brother, and we wrote song parodies about whatever was going on at the time. And believe me, in the mid-90s, early to mid-90s, there was plenty of shit to write song parodies about. We wrote it about the Amy Fisher, Joey Buttafuoco stuff. And OJ was like a giant parody gold mine. So I wrote a song, and we wrote it with my brother about the OJ thing. It was To Sitting on the Dock of the Bay by Otis Redding. And it was Gonna Electric Shock OJ, which, you know, we thought he was going to get the death penalty.
Yeah.
Silly us thinking someone who blatantly murdered two people might have been put to death. But that turned out differently. But at the time, it was a very popular little ditty. And Opie asked us to do it on his show one night. And I came in, and I was always looking to get out of construction and do something in the entertainment field. So when I got that chance to be on Opie's show and perform that song live, I wasn't just going to do the song. I started doing impressions and I started talking about the news and making jokes, and Opie was really taken by it and suggested I come in again next week. And then the next week it was like, come in twice a week. And before I knew it, I was a semi-regular on that. And he was sending tapes out of our shows to other radio stations. And Boston, WAAF, called and said, hey, we'd like you to do the afternoon slot here in Boston. And he asked me if I wanted to do it. And I was like, hell yeah, this is my chance. And that is how the ONA show started. And for, you know, a couple of decades, it became one of the most popular shows in the country. So I guess I made the right choice.
Yeah, I certainly think you did. You know, also, I know that you worked as a tin knocker. I know you probably didn't enjoy it, but tell us about that.
It was the weirdest thing. Like,
Hey, so are you looking to spice things up in the bedroom? If you want to have a threesome with you, me, and Adam and Eve, go ahead on adamandeve.com. And if you put in the code CRAZYTRAIN, that's crazy with a K, you can get up to 50% off of most items and 10 free goodies. That's right. Go to adamandeve.com and put in the code CRAZYTRAIN, crazy with a K, and you can get up to 50% off of certain items and most of all those 10 free gifts. You can give it to your wife, your girlfriend, whoever.
Some people like I was a tin knocker who was supposed to be in entertainment. I was an entertainer who happened to be in tin knocking. Like, I never thought like I was, I never saw it as, hey, I sure hope I get into some form of the entertainment business. I looked at it like, motherfucker, I should be in the entertainment business. Why am I in construction? It's a very difficult job. I hated it. It was real work, which I hate, obviously, by my work habits, even doing this. But I just wanted out of it so badly. But while I was in it, I was entertaining. I would go to job sites, and I saw at Radio Shack one day, they had this microphone that you could broadcast over FM radios. And if you've ever been on a job site, you know, one guy brings in the radio and broadcasts classic rock, Howard Stern, whatever it was, to the job site. And I was like, this is great. I am going to climb up a ladder, hang over some ductwork so no one can really see me and they think I'm working. And then I'll turn the mic on and I'll fuck with people on the job site. And it was so fun. Someone would walk past the radio and I'd be like, hey, you plumbers are a bunch of fags. And you're like, the plumber would stop and look at the radio and freak out. And everyone's laughing because they know I'm the guy doing it. So I always had this kind of bug to be a smartass, to be entertaining, to make people laugh. Always did in school. I would tape. I had a company van. And they had those Motorola radios, and you used to have to call the base and go 18 to base, 18 to base. I'm at the job site. So I would tape other people calling the base. So I was 18 and let's say 16 would call, and I'd tape it and he goes 16 to base. And then an hour later, I'd play it back and go 16 to base. And the guy at base would go, all right, go ahead, 16. 16 to base. Yeah, go ahead. Fuck off, base. You get back here. I'm going to kick your fucking ass. So I constantly had this thing in me that needed to fuck around, needed to make jokes. And I loved using the technology of the day to do it. And that just turned into what I've ended up doing for, the rest of my life.
I think it's great. And how did you come into Compound Media?
That was almost a forced thing. I thank God had been working on something of my own for a few years prior to that, to getting fired. But I was at SiriusXM Satellite Radio, having a great time doing the ONA show, Jim Norton. I mean, comics coming in, top comics of the day. And we would just have a pisser. Greatest job you could ask for. But I also was doing something called Live from the Compound. And this was my house. I called it the Compound. And I built a video studio. Now, this might sound like, oh, who cares? This was over 10 years ago. This is before everyone had a podcast and the ability to video cast themselves and talk about whatever they wanted. I set it up because I always thought I want something that looks exactly like the evening news, but presented by a drunk idiot whenever he decided to pop on and sing karaoke with heavy weaponry while I was drinking. I did that. It was just a lot of fun. And I was very interested, again, in the technology that was available to civilians to broadcast something that looked amazingly professional. So that started me putting together this studio in my house and broadcasting on the weekends and doing things. And Sirius gave me some shit about it. When we signed our second contract, they wanted to prevent me from doing any broadcast from my house because they thought it was some type of competition or it demeaned the exclusivity that they had signed me for. And I'm like, dude, I'm singing karaoke drunk from my house. This isn't really interfering with the Opie and Anthony show. So I was able to let that fly on that contract. And thank God I had done that because I got fired in July of 2014 from Sirius XM. I was in Manhattan. I had an apartment on 51st and 8th. And I would go into the city and stay there on weekends. If I had a gig on Fox News doing Red Eye or something with Greg Gutfeld, I would stay in the city. A lot easier than taking the train. So I'd be there. I'd go to the bars and drink. And then I had a great Canon camera. And I wanted to take pictures of New York City in the wee hours of the morning because it's amazing to see New York with no one in it or just a few people. The lights are on. Times Square, by the way, is, and this is documented, the most photographed place on earth. So yeah. It wasn't like I was doing something outrageous. I'm taking pictures of Times Square at 2 a.m. And a black woman was not too psyched to hear the telltale sound of a Canon camera going off behind her. But I was taking pictures of the street. Yes, of her walking down the street. It was a great picture of Times Square in the background. She turned around and said, "Yeah, no, you ain't taking no pictures of me. Delete those pictures." I'm like, what are you? And I'm willing and able to talk to her about it and delete the pics if she wanted. I don't care. I'll take 50 more of it without her in it. But she just started smacking me in the face.
What?
Yeah. I wasn't too hip to that.
Yeah.
I told her knock it off. And then I got defensive and saying, look, I'm allowed to take pictures anywhere. She started smacking me even more. And I'm not going to hit her back. And by the way, I had a carry license in New York City. I was armed with a pistol, absolutely legally allowed to carry a firearm in New York City, which I think I was one of three civilians allowed to do that. Uh-huh. I never even hinted that I had a gun, never mind pulling it out to shoot her or anything. I understood this was not a life-threatening situation. I didn't need to use deadly physical force. I was just pissed. I was pissed off that this black woman did this jump to violence, immediate jump to violence. Didn't want to talk about her anything. So she goes her separate way. I go back to my apartment in Midtown and I was pissed. So I went on my Twitter account and I tweeted how angry I was. And how it just seems like there's this problem in the black community with this jump to immediate violence instead of being able to talk about a situation. And oh my God, Anthony's racist diatribe, the racist Anthony Cumia, put a hate-filled tweet on all the shit, all the bullshit about racism and everything came out, and I was fired because of that, because I was assaulted by a black woman in Times Square and responded with zero violence. I responded with a tweet about how angry I was and the problems I saw that led to me being assaulted. That got me fired. I had a gun on me, for God's sake. I didn't use it. I talked. I voiced my displeasure. And I was summarily fired for that. And your question, that's when I, thank God, had that lifeboat in my house of logistics set up to do Compound Media. And I started maybe a month or two later doing my own show, Compound Media.
Yeah, that's just, it sort of sets a narrative today. But did she look like Fat Fanny Willis by any chance? Was she big like that? That fucking bitch. Oh. Dude, seriously, like, I went off on memes on Fat Fanny Willis. Like, we did a meme of her at the Louis Vuitton store with her boyfriend. Fat Fanny Willis spending the taxpayers' dollars at Louis Vuitton. Fat Fanny Willis on vacation. I mean, if she was as big as Fat Fanny Willis, you wouldn't need a gun. You needed a freaking spear or something for that.
Seriously. That would have been, I would have needed a locomotive or something to tip her over. It's amazing. And Fanny Willis is a great example of, black privilege.
I was about to say it. Yeah.
Yeah. Black privilege, the ability to do anything, to break the law, to break ethics, to break anything, your oaths as a servant of the community and the population and society, and zero repercussions. No consequence. You're actually looked at as the victim. And until this gets even discussed, you can't even talk about this. We are criminals right now, even discussing this. And until it could at least be talked about, it's only going to continue and get worse. And, you know, we see the result of it. We see things that are terrible happening in our country, but we're not able to even address it.
Oh, no, if you do that, it's like you're racist. That girl at Planet Fitness, this was in Alaska of all places. Did you hear about this? If I saw a man invading a woman's space, I don't care what the hell you identify as. I don't care what you think your pronouns are. You have a penis. You have a mental issue. Stay the fuck out of the bathroom. Go shave in the street or something. But now Planet Fitness is losing like $400 million. Bud Light had a situation, so I kind of see a pattern here. And then when it comes to this whole thing with like Fannie Willis, Letitia James, and all these people, they're never going to pay the price of anything after, you know, the George Floyd riots. And I saw all that stuff across the street from me in LA at the Van store. I didn't see any type of activism going on there. Man, I wanted a free pair of shoes. I didn't think they had any, you know, any in there in my size by the time they were done cleaning it out. But hey, why not, right?
It's astounding. They're just the way organizations like Antifa and Black Lives Matter present themselves as these harbingers of anti-fascist. And what they do is practice absolute fascism. They don't want freedom of speech. I'm sure you saw the videos of Kyle Rittenhouse at Memphis University. And they would not let him speak. They were constantly interrupting. Out front, they were intimidating, harassing, and threatening people that wanted to just see somebody. These are people that just want to listen to a person speak. They might not even agree with them. They're just going, you know what? I am going to go in here and listen to this guy speak his piece and see if my opinion is warranted, or maybe see if he makes points that I go, huh, that's interesting. I never thought of it that way. Isn't that the way we should deal with people that we don't agree with? And all they want to do is silence the person that wants to speak and make it completely unable for people to listen. And that's more important, I think, than silencing the speaker is making the people that want to hear it unable to hear it, because that involves a lot more people. And that is a right. You should be able to hear what people have to say. You're interfering with one person when you step on their First Amendment right to express themselves, but you are stepping on a shitload of people's rights when you're preventing them from hearing what that person wants to say. And the only reason you do that is because you're petrified that they're going to hear something and go, huh, well, that certainly isn't what I've been told.
It's really sad because I've been to a Turning Point USA event before in Newport Beach, California, and there were kids that were Democrats there. There were mostly Republican kids, conservatives, but nobody acted out like that. And one of the kids told me that at their schools, when they have the Republican club like meet, they have people from the Democratic club come to these events, but they don't Yes. have riots there. They don't have stupidity. When I was in the Republican club in school, like I was in this when I was a teenager, I actually went to Reagan and Bush's inauguration day in 1980. My Yes. mom took me, so I still have my T-shirt from when I was a little kid. But you go there and it's different.
I'd like
doing
to
politics
welcome.
Then.
Well, I'd huh? like to welcome Jasmine St.
Yes,
she's
I
a
loved
great
Reagan
American. And by golly.
See, you have the voices. You do the best impersonations. I think you do.
I loved Reagan, man.
I know. He had a love for the country. And if you've ever been to the Reagan Library in California, you could tell he had a love for California. Like he'd be rolling uh-huh. in his grave right now. You yeah. see, you do the voice.
California yeah. was a totally different animal back then than it is now. And it's amazing to see, relatively speaking, how quickly it changed.
It's scary. Like I have a bunch of stocks, the DWAC ones, Digital World Acquisitions. I have those from before. I know it's going to change over to DJT stocks. And I called the girl today, Merrill Edge, to ask her a question when I said, you know, Donald J. Trump, well, what do you mean? I said, the stocks are switching over to DJT. When will that happen? Like what day? She had to take a break from the conversation because I said his name. I'm like, you've got to be shitting me. You don't speak English that well. And you're going to tell me that you need to take a break. I just hung up the phone. Like, I just called back. I couldn't deal with that shit.
They're triggered. So you do a lot of live. Understand. Be more tolerant, Jasmine. These people get triggered at the name. You don't want them upset.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Try the night. Dude, I was fighting with people on Springer's show. You want to talk about triggers? There's a Jerry Springer documentary coming on, and it's out in September. When I was filming the documentary, the producer was like, okay, I have to ask you this. Okay. What? Do you need any type of therapy? There's a therapist there from England. Do you need a therapist at all? I'm like, why would I said, dude, well, just the re-traumatization. Do you need that? No, why would I need that? I said, dude, I survived this shit. It wasn't even a big deal then. It's not a big deal now. And I'm proud of it. So you can't sit there and ask someone from that era, basically being, you know, as one of the voices of American shock culture, if I need a fucking therapist. Like, that's long gone.
Jasmine, that's...
So if you're looking for the safest and coolest way to bet online and the most variety, of course, of games and like almost anything you could bet on, stop at betonline.ag because I guarantee you there is something for everyone.
The world we're living in is this, obviously, the perpetual victimization of people, the need for a therapist when they hear something. Oh my God, I can't believe how weak of a person do you have to be that when you hear something, you have to run to a therapist or a drug or a group of protesters to make you feel better instead of, by the way, maybe just debating the person. How about that? And when you see these college campuses trying to shut down someone speaking, why don't you let them speak? And if they're so wrong in your mind, if you have so many reasons why they shouldn't speak on that campus, you should be able to pull that out, debate them and make them look ridiculous and stupid. And everyone else is cheering in the crowd and going, God, I knew that person was an idiot. And thank God you showed us. No, they'd rather them don't speak at all because they know it's going to be the exact opposite and they're going to make them look stupid.
I wonder if I should wear my Trump sneakers to the gym tomorrow. So do you still do a lot of stand-up? I think you do a lot of shows, right? Because I know I tried to book you in advance before.
I just started doing stand-up maybe 2 years ago, which, mm-hmm. you know, is pretty late in my career to do that. It started out really because I was a lot of people had said through the years, Anthony, you should just try stand-up, do stand-up. And I'm like, I could get on the radio. I could get on a stage fronting a band, singing. I could do those things with no problem. Love it. The thought of standing up at a mic with a group of people there going, make me laugh, funny man, scared the living shit out of me. It was the one thing I just couldn't bring myself to do. So I slowly got into it by not even hosting a show. Literally getting up before a comedy show and going, hi, I'm Anthony. Here's your comics tonight and have a great evening. And we'll be out front later with merch and drinks and whatnot. And then that I did that and then started maybe going, hey, how you doing? Oh, I know this guy. And it slowly turned into me doing a little crowd work. And then I started thinking of things on the way to the gig that were, kind of what was going on in the world at that moment, some relevant shit and a joke. And I'd say that, and then people would laugh and I'd literally be standing there and say it and then go like, what the fuck is that sound? Oh shit. People laughing. Oh, and it got me really hooked on it. There's a drug feeling about that. There's this, when you can stand up there and you just go, and you hear, whoa, you're like, oh, shit, they're laughing. This is great. And that got me into wanting to do it. And then I got connected up with Comedians of the Compound. And it was all the Live from the Compound comics that do shows. Gino and Chrissy and
I love Chrissy.
Don. And we just go out and do these live stand-up shows. And COVID hit. And that stopped everything dead. And then after COVID, I started doing this tour with Josh Denny and Gavin McInnes and Ryan and myself. And we'd go to cities all over the country and do stand-up. And it was this very irreverent, very politically incorrect. We called it the End Racism Tour.
Is that what you called it?
There'd be no races. It was a little, a little bit, you know, kind of a goof name. But people loved it. I loved doing it. I really got this love of doing stand-up.
Yeah, and racism. Well, actually, you know what? Actually, you are the minority. You're a middle-aged white man. So, yeah, people are racist towards you.
Yes.
Especially like these fourth-wave feminists. They get so scared. I have this meme that I shared. It has these girls that are like 500 pounds with like front boobs where the belly is and shit. Oh. It says, back off, effing white male. We are on a sex strike. It's like, dude, you just stand your sex strike, seriously, because no one wants that. It's this whole fourth wave feminism, body acceptance, the whole, I'm hoping things change. Do you think anything's ever going to change to go back to some version of normalcy?
I dream about it, but I see no light at the end of the tunnel. With the powers that be that are in charge, what I see coming out of Hollywood, mainstream news media, Madison Avenue advertising, all of it is catering to an agenda that has to demean white people overall, more white men. And straight white men are, if you've seen any commercial in the past decade, 5 years, 10 years, the white, straight white husband is a blithering idiot in every scenario. He comes up, I can't do anything. His wife now, his white wife, isn't much smarter than him, but she is a victim to his idiotic personality and inability to put together a coherent idea. But thank God there is a black couple living next door that could tell them what they need to do to make their lives a little easier. And they will say it in the most coherent way. And the white people are like, God, I never thought of that. End commercial. That is what you're seeing now. White people and white, straight white men especially, are presented in every situation as imbeciles. And it's blatantly obvious, and obviously it's racist. Yeah.
But most men are imbeciles anyway, regardless of race.
Well.
It's true. Well, not all. But I feel as though modern, this fourth wave of feminism, it just demasculinizes men. It teaches women to hate men and wants to make the woman the man. I don't know if that's fair to say at this point, but that's what it seems like when I see ads and everything.
I think people have this grave misconception that millennia of evolution and the way things have worked biologically can be changed because some politically correct group says so. And thousands, hundreds of thousands of years of evolution can be thwarted by someone saying something in a protest or presenting a commercial. We are human beings and we have an innate, like a ROM memory on a computer. It's not something that could be input and output. It's there. It's permanent. It's genetic. It's just the way it is. And these are things that can't be changed. These are things that say men are attracted to women. We want to procreate. We have a need and a passion for survival. We know when we're hungry. These are all basic instinctual things that are set in the human mind. And these dummies think that somehow, with a stern talking to, these could be reversed somehow. And we will now be people that think that if you don't date a transgender person, you're homophobic. And if you are a man that doesn't hug and kiss his best buddy, you have hangups about your sexuality. It's all shit that makes no sense. It has never been a thing for millennia, and it's just not natural.
Yeah, I have a problem with that. I saw a meme that most men should date a transgendered woman in order to conquer transphobia, which I don't get it. People have called me transphobe and all this stuff. I was like, okay, yeah, I'm transphobe. Sure, if that's what it is. It's one of these things where I don't know if we're going to progress as a nation together and have the nuclear American family, which is, it seems like it's a thing of the past. You know, you see all those photos of families in the 50s and these kids, when they go outside to dress, they wear like pajamas. I was sitting somewhere yesterday. This girl had her feet on the goddamn the bench at the restaurant and her slippers on. And she tells the waitress, oh, well, I have to go home soon because I have a meeting. Bitch, you're in sweats. What freaking meeting do you have? Jenny Craig or something? And you shouldn't even be eating right now. You need to like back off of the carbs, back off the food and go to a gym. But I couldn't say that. I really wanted to, though.
You should have. A little shame.
I know.
In this,
I've got to get as ballsy as you. I really do.
We're lacking shame is what it is. People used to be ashamed of doing things that would set them apart from societal norms. That is gone now. People are shameless in their actions, the way they treat people, the way they interact in a society. We see it all the time. I wax fantastic, as they say, about the good old days.
Yeah.
When you look at old films of people on an airplane, they're in suits and ties and dresses, and the kids are impeccably dressed, and they are paying attention, and they are polite, and the flight attendants are hot as fuck, and they're bringing you drinks. It was a great experience, and so American, so brilliantly. It brought the American persona and the amazing technology together, and It was magical. And now we look at people who hop on a plane like it's a fucking city bus, and they're in their pajamas and they're pissed that they've got a problem with their seat or the person sitting next to them. You're flying through the air, you ungrateful motherfucker. It's a miracle. And they're angry and they're fighting. And I swear, if the Wright brothers, if you could take the Wright brothers and bring them to the future and show them flight now, they would say, Orville, fuck the planes. Let's just go back to building bicycles. This is a problem. This is a fucking problem.
Yeah, some woman wanted me to move or ask if she could have my window seat. I was in business class because she wanted to sit next to her husband. I said, first of all, I picked the seat like 2 weeks ago. I'm not changing a window seat. Where's your seat? Oh, it's an aisle. Well, you should have thought about that because we're adults. Like, you don't know what to say to someone when they say that to you. She just looked at me like I killed her best friend. But yeah, that was that. This is like it's a different generation we're in for sure. I see a lot of Lenny Bruce in you. Did you like Lenny Bruce?
Yeah, I growing up, I wasn't one of these guys that was like, because a lot of comics or personalities that are kind of based in comedy, outspoken people, they'll always be like, Lenny was my man. I grew up on Lenny. I really didn't know a lot about Lenny Bruce. I was more of a George Carlin guy growing up. I bought all the albums. I loved listening to George. Yeah, more of the irreverent comics. When I was in my 20s, it was all about Dice. Just, you know, people that really wanted to mix shit up. But I definitely appreciate the courage of Lenny in a time where really no one was being that outspoken about things that were going on in the government, in society at that time. He was willing to do it and put his ass on the line and got arrested and didn't back down. And I do appreciate that kind of it's weird to call it courage or bravery, but especially in these days, you look and go, it is courageous. A lot of people have these feelings and these thoughts and how they feel about how this society should work. And they are petrified to say anything about it. They will lose their job. They will lose family members. They will be outcasts. And that takes some courage to come forward and actually address these things. And I do understand a lot of times, you know, I'd like everyone to be able to say what they feel. But I do understand that there are such horrible repercussions to speaking your mind these days that I get why people keep their mouths shut or sign on to social media under a pseudonym. I feel lucky and privileged that my social media accounts are Anthony Cumia. And every day I comment on what I feel and think about some of the most pressing issues in the world, regardless of what people say and call me a racist, sexist, homophobic, whatever it is, I do not care. And there is such a freedom in that that I know most people want and can never get.
Yeah, it truly is a privilege. And to be able to have the gift that you do, the gift of gab, I should say, after all these years and to continue, what do you think would have happened or what would you be doing if you weren't on Compound Media? Let's say you didn't have all these outlets and like it was completely canceled. Would you go back to construction? Would you be, I don't know, a male hooker? I don't know. I just...
I would never go back to construction under any circumstances. Okay. I would fly down to Mexico. I'd throw all my ID away and cross the border and go, Estados Unidos. And I would just start over as an illegal alien. That would probably be my best bet. And I tell people that's a great option if you're on the straits these days. But
it's not such a bad idea. You get free rent. You could even get a free house.
Yeah, free house, credit cards, a phone, guns now. They said that illegals have the right to arm themselves. They have a Second Amendment right, much to American citizens' chagrin. But I I think even if I hadn't ever gotten into broadcasting, never mind being canceled from it at some point, I was always so into technology, computers. I had, you know, an Atari 800 in the 80s, and I never stopped being a computer nerd and aficionado and just loving the technology that came out that I could use to, when a camcorders first came out, VHS camcorders, I was making shows with my friends and trying to get it on public access channels on cable television. So I think, especially with the technology getting so much more available to people, I would have ended up somehow doing a show, but I don't know. It's very tough, as people know, to get an audience if you're not already, you have some element of fame to you. Adam Carolla said that someone asked him, "Hey, Adam, how do you get a popular podcast?" He goes, "Number one, be famous." It's like, that's kind of the truth. What are you going to do? So that's I would have probably gone that route, and hopefully something would have came of it.
But there's so many people with podcasts that, like, I've never even heard of. And
yeah.
It's so big. It's like, well, wait, like, I'm sorry, who are you? What'd you do that was cool? Probably nothing, but you're just up here. Yeah. I know that sounds horrible. I speak at the podcast conventions. I did the last one in Colorado. I speak at the one next weekend in LA. So I meet these people left and right. It's like, why am I supposed to know who this person is? You know what I mean? And then it's that genre, this age group, which I have no problem with for the most part, but it's like they either get fascinated with like that whole era of 90s shock culture, or they get just really, I don't know if the word's judgmental, or just they don't get it. You know, like we could sit here and tell the stories, you and I, like all day, but they, as long as it has not existed like on Instagram, it's like, oh, well, it's not true. It didn't happen. But fuck, those people never got to be on Springer or Stern or Opie and Anthony. So fuck them. They don't count in my book. Now, tell us about Spare Me.
Spare Me, my latest tome, my latest book. A few years back, I put out Permanently Suspended. That was my first book. And it was about kind of everything from me growing up with my hilarious father and all the antics of my adolescence and getting into radio and things like that. This one kind of takes up when I got fired and started Compound Media and doing a show with Artie Lang and the trials and tribulations of that, having other co-hosts, trying to fire up a brand new internet network in this climate of cancel culture. And also trying to survive as an outspoken person in this day and age where people are trying to shut you down for saying anything that might be looked at as offensive. So that's pretty much what this new book is about. It's available on Amazon.com, of course, like everything.
Yes.
And it's for pre-order. It comes out in July. And yeah, I'm really happy with it, and I'm looking forward to it coming out.
Yeah, it sounds like I'll definitely pick up a copy as well. I like reading books from cool people only. And if what else do you have coming up? Any shows, or is it just the book? Are you doing any writing projects or anything like that?
I'm just here in South Carolina. I'm continuing broadcasting from my new studio down here to Compound Media every day, 4:30. To 6 p.m. Eastern time at compoundmedia.com. We got a few shows, Gino Visconti and Chrissy Mayer. Mm-hmm. I do a show with Gavin McInnes every Wednesday, 4:30 to 6 Eastern. And other than that, I'm on YouTube, on Compound Media on YouTube. Name is Compound Media. And I stream. I play Call of Duty, and I play PGA 2K23. I yell because I get mad. I also just do a talking stream every so often. My Twitter is Anthony Cumia. I finally got that back after 7 years in exile and using alt accounts under various names. Elon Musk found it in his wisdom to return my original account, my name, Anthony Cumia, to Twitter, which I use a lot, and I voice what people might call pretty controversial opinions on the state of our nation.
Yeah, I noticed that. I do your retweets quite a bit. I do reply to them, and then people troll so hard these days. What did you reply to that for? Like, why are you saying that? It's like, wow, yeah. You really have no life. It's just,
yeah,
it's one thing or another with these people. It's like, you can't please everyone. Yeah.
No.
So let's hope it doesn't get canceled.
I know. Yeah.
It's amazing. But yeah,
I'm a lot more careful these days. I'm a lot like after I think I signed up to Twitter the second year it was even around 2011, whatever it was. So I've been on for a long time and my name was Anthony Cumia. And when I got canceled in 2014 for 7 years, I didn't have that name. But I used other names. I was able through those names and canceling of some of those accounts and getting other names, I was able to kind of figure out what got you thrown off and what mm-hmm. didn't. So knock wood, nowadays, I kind of have a gist as to how to word things, how to present things. You can't call people savages, but you can say that that is savage behavior. You
gotcha.
See? There's a way to do things that I can get my point across without getting thrown off.
No, I appreciate you teaching me that today. I mean, I see some luck. Like Chrissy Mayer's baby shower was getting threatened. All she said was "Our sirens, the Black national anthem." So I retweeted it. And the next thing you know, oh, I'm going to call Amazon. I'm going to call the place to have the baby shower and get that canceled. It's like, you've got to be kidding me. Are you serious? So, you know, here's the thing. At the end of the day, with these videos that we post, those people in those videos, they cast themselves in those. We didn't cast them. They did it on their own.
Absolutely.
It's like, it's nothing you can do. It's just the way it is.
Love it, Jasmine.
But thanks so much for coming on. I know that you're on your show earlier, so I get it. Back to back could be so tough with these things. And
all good.
As often as you do, it's a lot of work.
I love it. I love it. You're awesome, Jasmine. You've always been great on the show when you've come on. And I love that you're doing this. I love that you're outspoken. And, you know, again, the bravery that comes with voicing your own opinions, saying what you want, exercising that First Amendment right. Regardless of what people try to do to you, there is a courage in that. And I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate everything you're doing too. And hopefully I'll be on your show again because I had so much fun last time.
Yes. I'll get E-Rock to book that ASAP, as they say.
ASAP is ASAP. Maybe. And if you're lucky, I'll bring my Mike Lindell bobblehead.
That is.
Hey, it's signed.
You
is
put
this
that
creepy?
Right next to your pillow when you sleep. I get you.
Yeah, I do. His pillows are awesome. I think he's another great warrior of our time. But thanks so much for coming on. Everyone, check out Anthony Cumia on Twitter and every other social media outlet there. And I will post all of your links to your shows and so forth. Sit tight.